Morning. Today's daf and chulin's daf nun. We are in the Gemara on Mem Tes. We're a little bit behind. We're on Mem Tes and Aleph. We're starting today Nikva Keva, and we're going to now move to the fourth stomach of an animal, and that is that of a keva. Okay. Perhaps you'd like a little bit of an orientation in terms of just understanding anatomically where we are in the animal. We are moving now down the animal. So again, it's not a perfect. Or organization of the Mishnah in terms of just moving from the head down to the tail. But nevertheless, so that's been our trend. We've been trending downward. So we've been discussing up until now the brain, the lungs, the heart, kind of a vesha, which are the first two things mentioned in the Mishnah, the trachea and the esophagus. But now as we move past the diaphragm, so now we're in the digestive system of the animal. The digestive system of an animal, ruminating animals, is that it is similar, but marked differences between human anatomy. And this is now where bovine anatomy comes into play. It does not have one stomach, rather it has four stomachs. Four stomachs of an animal, first stomach of the animal. If you'd like to see chulin illuminated, just again, we're just getting an orientation right now so that the Gemara will flow a little bit clearer. You could take a look, if you want a schematic, on page 67. So you get a nice schematic of it. Schematics are sometimes a little bit easier to see, because when you're looking at the thing itself, it's kind of hard to see definition. So the schematics over there, you see right underneath the diaphragm. So I'm on page 67. So you see the liver, and then you see a series of stomachs. On the bottom, you see the fourth stomach of the animal, the keva. That's going to be what we're going to be describing in great detail. You'll notice that the keva has a very odd shape to it, and we're going to be focusing a lot over the course of today's daf, the shape of it. Now, if you turn the page and take a look at page 68, so once again, now you're going to basically, he cut out the entire GI tract of the animal. Well, not all of it, but in other words, from the esophagus down. And so what you're looking at over here is the following. So to the left of the esophagus, you have the keras. That's the main stomach. That's not the main stomach, sorry. That's the first stomach. That's where the food first goes into. In English, translates as the rumen. Right to the right of it, you have the base of costus. That's the reticulum. We discussed a little bit yesterday. What we do not see is that there is a third stomach over here. Third stomach is not in this particular picture. Must be on the other side of it. That is the hemsis. And then what you do see on the bottom, however, is the keva. Once again, note on the keva, the shape of the keva. It looks a little bit like a boomerang, right? Looks a little bit like the letter U, if you will. That is going to become important a little bit later on. You'll notice, of course, that in these pictures, there is a tremendous amount of fat that surrounds these stomachs. Let's point to two pieces of fat in particular. There is chelav shel hakerev. There is chelav that is on top of the kerev, and then chelav hamechase es hakerev. Okay, so these particular fats now are classic examples of, in fact, chelav. Okay, if you remember in the presentation that we saw, Rabbi Ben David shechted the animal. So if you remember that which goes right over the rumen, so it basically just drapes over the rumen, and you basically were able to peel it off. It actually looked like a drape. Okay. And stay tuned, because you're going to hear the term again a little bit later as well. Page 69, if you want another picture. In this picture, so we are looking at it from the underside, and the advantage that we get in this picture over here is that you're able to see the hemsis. So over here in picture 69, you see all four stomachs in its finest. You see the keras to the left, right to the right of it, the base of costus, the reticulum. Just underneath the reticulum, the base of costus, you have the hemsis. And then below that, you have the keva. The keva is the fourth stomach of the animal, and that is probably the one that we're most used to in terms of stomachs, in that that's where the digestion occurs, and that's where the food is then going to be fully digested and sent into the intestines. More about the intestines coming up a little bit later on. That is just a brief orientation to all the stomachs of the animal, and specifically that of the keva. If you want to, just as long as we're here, so you want to see you want to see a little bit more. So the so take a look at page 70. Truth of the matter is, hold on to page 70. We're going to come back to page 70 a little bit later on. 70 is going to be a big topic in today's discussion. If you see the cave over there and surrender by all that wonderful fat, so that's going to be a big part of today's discussion. In the Gemara itself, we're going to be starting on Mem Tes Amud Aleph, and we are at the two dots, Nikva Keva, and we're talking about a Nekev in the Keva. It's one of the Yurches Trefas, is one of the 18 Trefas mentioned in our Mishnah, which obviously would render the animal a Trefa, making the animal prohibited. Amar Yisrael Bar Nachmini, Amar Rabbi Yoshi, Achel Shagabi Keva. So what about the Chelv that is on the Keva? Now, the Chelv that's on the Keva, so if you take a look at the picture over here on page 70, you'll see that there is a lot of Chelv surrounding the Keva. So if you just bear with us a little bit over the course of today's daf, so we're going to be more specific in terms of what we meant. So Kohanim Nagu Bo Heter. Now, Kohanim themselves practiced the Heter, and that they deemed it not to be forbidden fat, but rather permissible fat. Meaning in an animal, you have two types of fat. You have Chelv and you have Shuman. Chelv is a forbidden fat and Shuman is a permissible fat. We are going to be learning in today's daf how to make a differentiation between that which is prohibited and that which is permissible. In the meantime, without knowing any information as of yet, all we need to know for now is that the Kohanim were eating this chelev, which could be prohibited, but nevertheless, nagu bo heter, they allowed for a heter for themselves, ki Rabbi Yishmael. Shamar Mishum Avosav. Rabbi Yishmael, based on a statement made by Rabbi Yishmael, who said in the name of his father, v'simancha, and the Gemara says, and I'll give you a good way to remember this, a mnemonic, Yishmael Kahane, Messiah Kahane. Yishmael himself was Kohen, Yishmael Kohen Gadol, right, one of the Asara Haruge Malchus. So Messiah Kohane, based on his position, so it helped out the Kohanim in that they were able to eat the chelev that is on the keva. Mind you, by the way, that every time you shecht an animal, so you are going to be giving pieces of the animal over to the Kohen. This is matnas kahuna. These are your basic matanas that come from every single animal that's shechted. This is not carbon related. So as far as the carbon, I made the mistake just the other day. As far as the carbon is concerned, for shlamim, so there are pieces of a carbon that go to the Kohen. That's chaz v'shok. However, when it comes to a regular animal, chulin animal that's shechted, zroa l'chaye v'keva, are going to the Kohen. Three parts of the animal go to the Kohen. One of those three parts is the keva. The keva is the fourth stomach of the animal. Every time you shecht an animal, you have to take that and give it over to the Kohen. So what we're learning now is that this is very helpful to the Kohanim because they are getting the keva from every animal. This is part of the Chav Dalav Manas Kahuna. And so the chelev that's on the keva, so they allow themselves to eat it. With all that stated, so we know it's controversial, but we don't know why it's controversial. And so here we begin now with a very detailed Gemara regarding the whys. So Mahi detailed the Gemara quotes the following brisa, quotes of Aruch Bnei Yisrael. So we start off light over here. We're not starting on the anatomy. We're just starting on a different issue, and that is the following. We know that the Kohanim have a mitzvah to bench the Jewish people, and And many do it to this very day on a daily basis, even though we don't have a base of mikdash, but still it's a mitzvah in of itself of birchas kohanim. So the anshei sfard do it on a daily basis. Ashkenazim, depending if you're in America or Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael daily, in America on yontif, and not even every davening of yontif. But anyway, kos of aruchus bnei Yisrael, Rabbi Shmuel Amar lamanu baruch Yisrael mi pi kohanim lekohanim atzmam lo lamanu. So Rabbi Shmuel over here wonders, you know, the Kohanim serve as a conduit of bracha. That's great. Are the Kohanim themselves also getting a bracha? Meaning, you don't really get that sense as you're reading the psukim. Meaning, the Kohanim are going to be the ones that are going to have the bracha go through them. But what about them themselves? So the way Rabbi Shmuel understands the pasuk is, yes, reading the pasuk carefully, encrypted in the pasuk, is the idea that the Kohanim themselves also are going to get a bracha, va'ani avarchem. Now, it's not clear in the pasuk itself who the subject of this phrase is. I'm going to bless them. Who's the them? So the way Rabbi Shmuel understands it, the them is referring to the Kohanim. Havi amar Kohanim avarchem, li'sov ha'karash baruchum avarch le'Kohanim. And the way it works is that the Kohanim bench the Jewish people, and meanwhile, HaKadosh Baruch Hu benches the Kohanim. Rabbi Kiva Amar Lamanu Baruch Leisrael Mipi Kohanim Mipi Gvur Lo Lamanu Kishu Amar Veni Avrachem Havi Amar Kohanim Avrachem Leisrael HaKadosh Baruch Hu Maskim Al Yadam. Now, when Rabbi Kiva arrives at the same phrase of that very same pasuk, so he says, no, Ve'ani Avrachem is HaKadosh Baruch Hu Zaskama, meaning the Kohanim bless the Jewish people, but that's great. That's a bracha. Wonderful. Who's backing it? who's the guarantor? So that's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Va'ani Avarchem is a Kadosh Baruch Hu's haskama to the bracha that the Kohanim give to the Jewish people. According to Rabbi Kiva now, well, only begs the question, how are the Kohanim going to get a bracha? So Ella, Rabbi Kiva, bracha la Kohanim anale. So from Rabbi Akiva, where do I know the Kohanim themselves are going to be getting a bracha? Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, me'avarechecha mevarechecha. So we know it from the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Avram that whoever blesses you is going to be blessed. So that means that if you are a blesser, so that also means that you're going to be a source of blessing as well. You will not only be the blesser, but you also be the object, that which is going to be blessed. So in other words, by virtue of the fact that the Kohanim are giving the bracha, so they themselves are going to be getting a bracha. So, umay misai Kohanim. So the Gemara says, okay, so let me ask them a very simple question. Comes out that although Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Kiva are in fact disagreeing over what is the simple pshat of the pasuk of Ani Avarchem, whether the subject in that pasuk is the Kohanim or the Jewish people, when all said and done, we have agreement. Both Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel are of the opinion that the Kohanim are going to get a bracha. It's just a question of where we learn it from. Do we learn from the pasuk of Avani Avrachim, or do we learn it from Avarechecha Mevarechecha? So the Gemara says, and if that's true, that they agree ultimately, so then why is Rabbi Shmuel helping out the Kohanim? Rabbi Kiva is being just as helpful, because even according to Rabbi Kiva, the Kohanim are still going to get a bracha. Answers the Gemara. Demukil al birchas kohanim b'makom bracha d'Yisrael. Rabbi Shmuel is just a little bit better. Try to articulate how this is a little bit better, but the Gemara says, because according to Rabbi Shmuel, the Kohanim are getting the bracha from the parsha of birchas kohanim. Meaning, as opposed to Rabbi Kiva, who gets it from parshas lech lecha, so it's quote-unquote an outside source. Mashenkin, according to Rabbi Shmuel, internally we know in the parsha itself that the Kohanim are going to get a bracha, and that's better. I can't quantify how that's better, but nevertheless, the Gemara assumes that that's better.
It says in the Birkas Kohanim, Yubrecho Hashem. So it says that Hashem is going to be to.
No, but it's the Kohanim. It's a Kohanim talking to Bnei Yisrael.
What?
It's a Kohanim talking to Bnei Yisrael. They're just good. They're facilitating. Good. That's what they're doing. They're facilitating. Okay. I'm with you. By the way, I know I'm pushing back, but I'm with you. I also the Havamina is a strange Havamina, but okay. The Gemara entertained it. Now, Rabbi Shmuel Shamar Mishum Avos of Mahi. Okay. So now, okay, that was the light part, so to say. I mean, brachas are not light, but but in terms of understanding, it's very straightforward. And now we get to the technical part of today's daf. And now look, it comes out now that we have one machlokes between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva having nothing to do with our discussion, but it just was a nod to the idea that Rabbi Shmuel, who generally helps out the Kohanim, so we just gave one example, and now we're going to learn another example of Rabbi Shmuel helping out the Kohanim, and here we go. Rabbi Shmuel Shama Mishum Avos of Ma'ida Tanya. We're on the very bottom of Mem Testament Aleph, so the Gemara now is going to be quoting the following Psukim and Braisa. Now, in order to understand this, so let's just make sure that we get the following straight. As I mentioned already, in an animal, you have fats. Some of them are permitted, some of them are forbidden. The permitted are what we generally refer to as shuman. The forbidden is what we call chalav. But that's just, that's semantics, meaning, okay, good. But how do we arrive at that conclusion? How do we know that this particular fat is permitted or forbidden? What is the criteria for determining whether fat is forbidden or permitted? That's what we're going to be learning right now. So what we're going to do, we're going to do this in one of two ways. One is that we have the following guideline, and that is that if the chalev of an animal, if the fat of an animal is going on the base of Mikdash, meaning if this particular animal was a carbon, so then that is fat that we're not allowed to eat. So any chalev going on the Mizbeach is what we're not allowed to eat. So if we can properly identify that, so then we know that is fat that we're not allowed to eat. Any fat that does not have to go onto the Mizbeach as a carbon is fat that we are allowed to eat. Good. That's step one. Step two, we have to identify which fats of an animal go onto the Mizbeach. Now, the Torah does give a description, but even with the Torah's description, there is room for debate amongst the Tanaim. And we'll see all this inside. The Tanaim, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, is called Chelav Asher al HaKerev. So, we have a description in the Torah of chelav that goes on to the kerev. This is a description of the fats of the animal that are going on to the Mizbeach. And, an important addition that we have to put into the Gemara over here is the following. Right after the word Ditanya, so it quotes the pasuk, it says S. What we're going to have to do is we're going to have to add a Vav right before that. You look at the side of the Gemara, so he includes it. V'es kol achelav, asher al hakerev. Meaning because what we're looking over here is a ribuy. We're adding something. Now you understand where the Bryce is heading. So if it is called Chayav Asher Lakerev, now we're on the top of the next Amud, Lehavi, and that includes, now you understand, the inclusion over here is coming from the Vav. Lehavi Chayav Shal Gabe Adakin Div Rabbi Shmuel. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, what we're coming to include is the Chayav that are on the Dakin. So, when we're talking about intestines, so as we learned already, there are a lot of intestines. So Rashi over here, you take a look at the top Rashi in the Amud. So Rashi says we're talking specifically about the first section of intestines after the stomach. Look at the top Rashi, Lakam and Amrin and Reshmaya Ba'amsa by Grira. That the first part of the intestines immediately after the stomach is what requires scraping. Meaning you have to scrape off that chelav. V'zeu chelav shal adakin. Kishehama'ayim atchilim limashech hakeva have chelav shal adakin aser ad ama l'divra bishmal min mishechelav shal hakev shekarin tila mechubar bo v'akasam arbehu. And this is what the Torah is coming to include, says Rashi, in terms of the Vav. B'chlam the eskol chelav ava chelav shal hakeva l'rabi bishmal muter v'hainu mesai kawanim. Now, it is only, the Gemara right now is, the way the Gemara is proposing it, it's going to change in just a moment, but the way the Gemara right now is proposing it is that it's only this particular chelav which is forbidden, which means that if I go back to the keva, back to the fourth stomach, any chelav that's on that would in fact be permissible. This is Rabbi Shmuel helping out the Kohanim, because every time they get a keva, not only do they get to enjoy the stomach, but also the chelav that is surrounding the stomach as well. Good. Continuing in the Gemara, Rabbi Kiva Amar Lavi Chelav Shal Gabei Akeva, and Rabbi Kiva says, no, what's forbidden is the Chelav that's on the Keva. And so that means, of course, that according to Rabbi Kiva, when the Kohanim receive the Keva, so the Chelav that's on it, so they're going to have to take it off. Now, by the way, they can get Hana from it, they can get benefit from it, but they can't eat it. Now the Gemara says, okay, all this is well and good. Problem is that we have another Braisa, and the second Braisa gives us a slightly different version of the Machlokus between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. V'rimeinu etzech chelav shel hakerev, Rabbi Shimon Omer, should read Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, machel v'machas is a kerev krum v'niklav, av kol krum v'niklav. Rabbi Kiva Omer, machel v'machas is a kerev tosav krum v'niklav, av kol tosav krum v'niklav. Okay, now in this Braisa, basically what we're going to do is the following. We are looking at the pasuk describing chelav shel hakerev. Again, if you want to see that in picture form, Chelav Amechasas Akerev, so you can go back to page 68, and you'll see a sheet of fat that is covering a good part of the side of the animal. But again, we saw it together, it just kind of peels right off. So this is Chelav Amechasas Akerev. And here's now what is happening amongst the Tanaim. Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel are in fact using this as a model, meaning this is a prototype of Chelav that we're not allowed to eat. We know that this chelav is going to go up onto the Mizbeach, therefore we're not going to eat it. And now what we're going to do is, being that it's the prototype, we are going to draw the characteristics of this chelav and use these characteristics in terms of identifying which chelav is going to be aser and which chelav is going to be mutter. Now the difference between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva actually is really small in terms of characteristics. In fact, I read it quickly. I'll read it again. Es hachelav asher lakerev, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, machelav mechasas hakerev, krum v'niklav. According to Rabbi Yishmael, you only need two characteristics in order for it to be characterized as chelav, and therefore forbidden. Krum v'niklav. It has to have a membrane that peels off. So in other words, it is not just simply fat that is in the organ or in the muscle. But in other words, there has to be something that is encased in a membrane and you could peel it off. So afkol korn v'niklof, that means according to Rabbi Yishmael, all you need is the fat to have a membrane which could peel off, and therefore it's going to be chalev. As opposed to Rabbi Kiva, krum v'niklof, Rabbi Akiva Omer Machel v'machas l'karev tosav krum v'niklof. Afkol tosav krum v'niklof. Comes out now that according to Rabbi Akiva, one other feature, one other characteristic, it has to be tosav. What does that mean? Rashi over here describes that tosav basically means that it drapes over, meaning like clothing which covers, but basically you could just peel it right off. Take a look at Rashi tosav. He simla so mitargaminen he tosve. Okay, so Rashi of course has expertise in targum and chumash, so therefore for him Aramaic was not just a second language, but he knew it all, he knew it perfectly. So you take a look at Targum over there in Chumash, when the Torah talks about the simla of the Amana, which you shouldn't be taking as a mashkon. So he simla so, he tosve. Ke simla hu parish al hakerev, v'chein al hadakin baroshan. So any time that the fat is, again, he also has the encasing requirement, the encasing characteristic, but on top of that, also a draping, like clothing. So v'chein al hadakin baroshan. Now, the chelev that's found around the keva, so it is encased, it has a krum, it is encased, you could peel it off, but nevertheless, it doesn't drape on top of the keva. Ela chatichos chatichos hu aduk, v'shal adakim mirosha v'hala, hainu min hakanta kishem misparshin osto mehen, nisham min hachel v'tzlam v'lav tosav hu, ela aduk bahem. So in other words, it is... it does cling, but it doesn't drape over like what we're describing right now. So therefore, that means that according to Rabbi Akiva, in order for chalev to be prohibited, it has to have three characteristics. It has to have a membrane, the membrane has to be able to be peeled off, and it drapes over. Comes out now that according to Rabbi Akiva, that means then that the chalev that's on the keva is not forbidden, but rather permitted. Comes out that according to Rabbi Yishmael, you only need two characteristics for it to be chalev. It only needs to be krum v'niklof. It has to have a membrane, the membrane peels off. Now that's a little bit strange, as the Gemara is going to point out, not a little bit. But now that means that according to Rabbi Yishmael, the chalev that's on the keva is prohibited because it does have the characteristic of krum v'niklof. And now what the Gemara is about to teach us is, I don't understand. Didn't you just say, isn't the whole start of the discussion, Rabbi Shmuel was there to help the Kohanim? And this is not a help. So I've called Tosef Krum v'Niklof. Shalach Rav Mishmei Rav Yochanan Kachi Atzah Shal Mishnah. So the Gemara says, okay, in other words, the way we just learned it together, that's the correct girsa. So what we just learned together, that Rabbi Akiva is going to be more lenient than that of Rabbi Shmuel, check. That's correct. The epoch kamaisa. Now, what we learned previously, meaning at the bottom of the previous amud, top of this amud, so that we're going to have to flip around so that we have alignment of the shitas of Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. So, my chaz is davcha kamaisa epoch kamaisa. So, the Gemara says, look, I understand that we need alignment, and I understand that we're going to have to flip around one of the shitas. Why did you flip around that first braisa? Why not this last braisa? Shani hacha kevin de katani ma davcha. So, the Gemara says, well, I know the second braisa that we just learned together is a more authoritative and precise braisa, because if you read the braisa carefully, ma chelav hamachasa. In other words, the braisa over here was not just simply stating shitas, but also giving reasons behind the shita. And so clearly the second braisa is a cleaner, more authoritative version of the machlok chin Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. And so therefore the first braisa, which is just basically, what am I going to be marbe? Once does this, once does this. Okay, good. So we're just going to flip it around. So ihachi karebi shmal karebi kivahi. So the Gemara says, okay, so then we have to go back to the beginning of our entire sugya, and we have to basically flip around the entire premise. Meaning, we said that Rabbi Shmuel was helping the Kohanim. Incorrect. Rabbi Kiva was helping the Kohanim, because Rabbi Kiva was telling the Kohanim that every time you take the keva, so you can take various fats on the keva, because according to Rabbi Kiva, it's not chalev. So Amar Rav Nachman Reisvik Shamar Mishum Avosa Velelo Sfirulei. So the Gemara says, no, we're going to keep our original statement. Rabbi Yishmael himself would not allow the consumption of the chalev on the keva. That part's true. Rabbi Yishmael was not stating his own opinion. In fact, if you go back to the very beginning of the sugi, you'll see that he's stating the opinion Mishum Avosav. This is his parents, his father's opinion, but not his own opinion. Okay, and good. And so therefore, everything can remain as it is. All right. Adkan, that takes us now to the... It's not the end of the sugya, by the way. There's more coming up in just a bit. But if I ask the question now, the chalev that's surrounding the cave, the fourth stomach of the animal, is it permissible or is it forbidden? Here's what we know for sure. It is a machlokas. It is a machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Kiva. And what it's predicated on is that we know the Torah gives a description of chalev that we're not allowed to eat. And what we're looking now is to give its characteristics of what it is. And based on the characteristics that we are going to be giving it, so therefore we're then going to translate that over to the chalev of the keva. Comes out now that according to Rabbi Kiva, he's a mekel, and he allows for the consumption of it. And according to Rabbi Shmuel, he's going to be a machmer. Gemara now is going to be basically addressing more or less the same question, but coming at it from a different perspective, and that's the following. We know that in the animal there exists chalev and there exists shuman, where the one is permitted and the other is prohibited. We generally know which parts are, which parts aren't. There are some areas anatomically that are subject to a debate. And now the Gemara teaches us the following. Amar Rav. Chilav tar sosem, tame ino sosem. Now, in terms of creating a seal. Now, you remember that we learned earlier in the Masechta, earlier in this parak, I should say, that in general, seals are no good. Meaning if something has a hole, it has a perforation, it has a puncture, so if it then is subsequently sealed in the animal, we're assuming it's some sort of organic seal, but it doesn't matter. In other words, the damage is done, the animal's punctured, the animal's a trefa, and we move on from there. However, there are certain circumstances where if it is a fat that is right next to that particular organ, and therefore creates a seal from the very beginning, so such a seal would in fact be acceptable seal. Here's what we're learning together right now, and that is that it has to be not just anything that's next to the punctured organ, but it has to specifically be shuman, and it can't be chalev. Now, in terms of an explanation, actually it's pretty straightforward. Shuman is soft, and shuman can really cover it and cover it well. Chalev is a hard fat. And so therefore, the chalev just simply will not functionally cover it to the same degree. So once we establish what is chalev and what is shuman, now we're going to use that in terms of telling us whether or not the seal would be a good seal or not a good seal.
Chalev tahor is chalev or shuman?
Chalev tahor is basically what you and I would call shuman. Right. So chalev tahor is so same. Kosher chalev, in fact, serves as a plug, as a seal. And tameh ain't so same. And forbidden fat is not going to be so same. Rav Sheshes Amar Echadzeh Vechadzeh Zosem. Now Rav Sheshes is a mekel. He allows for either the hard or soft fat, the forbidden or the permitted fat, to be serving as a stima, as a good seal. Now, by Rebbe Zeir Chelev Chayamai. So the Gemara wants to know, it's such a wonderful question. What about the chelev of a wild animal? So there are a number of wild animals that we're allowed to eat. And we also know that the chalev of a chaya is permitted. All of it. So now, question. So over here, in terms of the halachas of stima, so the chalev of a chaya, is it going to be able to be so same? Now, on one hand, it's permissible. On the other hand, it's organically, right, it's the same as the chalev of a kosher animal, meaning it's the same as non-kosher chalev. So my davka amar chelav tara sosim v'ainami tarahu. So is it contingent on the fact that it's kosher and this is kosher? Odiyoma mishum demahadek v'haila mahadek. Or no? Is this strictly a physiological phenomena in that only the soft fat serves as a great seal because it sticks on tight, as opposed to the hard fat which doesn't stick on tight, and this won't stick on tight? Amar Abaye ma'iti ba'ilei nehi d'shari b'achila adukala mahadek. So Abaye hears the question, but really... It feels that the answer is obvious, meaning the chalev of a chaya is hard. It doesn't seal, and if it doesn't seal, So then, even though it's mutter b'achila, but it doesn't seal. There was a hole in one of the organs of an animal. It was sealed, but it was sealed by chelev. It was brought in front of Rava, and for a decision whether or not this is going to be a good seal or not a good seal, is the animal a trefa or not a trefa? So Rava says, look, as far as I'm concerned, let's be mekel. Why not? Rav Sheshet is mekel. And furthermore, if we were to render and we were to decide that the animal would in fact be a trefa, we're going to financially suffer a loss. And the Torah does not want us to do that. Take a look. I'm not going to go through it right now. Long Rashi in terms of what are the sources of this. We went through a lot of it actually recently back in Menachos. But anyway, I'm Levi Papa Rava. Ravi Isur Daraisa Vatam Hatorah Chasam Amonisha Yisrael. So Rav Papa says, well, let's slow everything down. Yes, Rav Sheshes is Mekel, but Rav is Machmir. This is an Isser, this is a possible Isser d'Araisa. I know the Torah is worried about our money, but the Torah is also worried about our spiritual well-being as well. If this is an animal which is Aser, so of course we shouldn't eat it. And if it's a Safek d'Araisa, so he says we should be Machmir. Okay. Minyumin Kanduka Igle. The Gemara now is going to be telling a story totally unrelated but thematically linked. What happened was that with this individual by the name of Binyamin, sounds like Binyamin, but close. So So what happened is he had some honey and it underwent some exposure. Back in the good old days, and I guess this part wasn't good. So back in the good old days, so liquids that were exposed for periods of time, so there was a serious concern that some venomous animal inserted its venom into the liquid, and so therefore now this liquid is hazardous, extraordinarily hazardous. So although it's not usser, it's usser, meaning so there's no isser in the Torah other than, of course, preserving one's own life. So anything that went through gilui is going to be subject to this prohibition, this rabbinic concern, which is really based on the Torah's interest in us keeping ourselves alive. Is honey one of the liquids? Controversial. So over here now, so honey went through this gilui. So Rava says, number one, we know we have a brisa. The brisa identifies three liquids that are subject to the gilui concern: wine, water, milk. Shar kol hamashkim mutarim, but nothing else. We're talking about honey. And on top of that, what do you want to do? Throw out the money? That's a financial loss. The Torah does not want us suffering a financial loss. Amalei Rav Nachman Yitzchak L'Rav Rabbi Shimon V'Sakanta Nefashos. V'atamar Tatar Chosom Amon Shal Yisrael. So the Gemara says, okay, but there is a sheet of Rabbi Shimon, which we haven't seen yet. And he's going to be a machmir. And this is Sakanos Nefashos. And you're going to throw out the argument of, yeah, but we save money? Okay, that's great. So saving money is great. Living's better. Okay, so Rabbi Shimon Mahi. Now the Gemara says, okay, we mentioned Rabbi Shimon, so let's mention it just quickly. There are five things that are not subject to Gilui. So over here, the list, including fish brine, vinegar, oil, honey, and Moryas, right? More good stuff coming out of a fish. But anyway. Brine. Okay. Rabbi Shimon Omer Af Hain Yesh Ben Mishum Gilui. And Rabbi Shimon, I'm sorry, a list of five things that are not subject to Gilui. And Rabbi Shimon Omer Af Hain Yesh Ben Mishum Gilui. And Rabbi Shimon says they aren't subject to Gilui. So according to Rabbi Shimon, honey is one of the five liquids that is in fact subject to Gilui. So in other words, Rabbi Shimon is a Machmir. Ve'am Rabbi Shimon Ani, Reisei Nachash Hashasos Yir B'Tzidon. And Rabbi Shimon says, look, empirically, I saw it. I saw a snake drinking from tzir, from the fish brine. Amrle shatayahava. And so the response, what a great debate. And the response is, that snake, outlier. That is not a normal snake. So ve'em avin rayam in ashotim. And when you see deviant behavior, so you cannot construct arguments and principles and halachas based on deviancy, and that animal is a shotim. Now, Amar le odili mias bitzir the Havrapapa v'Ravuna b'Reid Rav Yeshua v'Rabbanan ki havale giluye shadulu bitzir. So he says, look, I know you want to be a machmir, but can you at least give me that seer should be okay? Because here's what I saw. I saw once that a snake, inserted its venom into another liquid. And what did they throw in to counteract the effect of the venom? So they threw in seer. So seer basically serves as some sort of antidote to venom. So you want to tell me now that if seer is going to be an antidote to venom, so we should be concerned about the actual seer itself? So, like, let's be makel when it comes to seer and not have it subject to gilui. Amalei odeli mia bedvash. The Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar kai kavasei. The Tanya v'chena ya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar oser bedvash. He says, okay, I'll tell you what. I'll consider being lenient when it comes to seer, but you have to be machmer as it relates to honey. Because even though we know it's a machlokus, we know not everyone agrees that honey should be subject to the gilui concern, but nevertheless, Rabbi Shimon was. And I'll add another tana to the list. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar also is concerned about gilui as it relates to honey. So would you be more machmir regarding? Would you consider being more machmir regarding honey? Okay, a little bit of a off the beaten track. But the reason why we went off the beaten track, quite frankly, is because the Hatorah Chasam Amon Yisrael, right? Trying to use that as one of the halachic considerations. It is a halachic consideration, but of course it has to be weighed and counterbalanced against other halachic considerations. Continuing now in the Gemara, we are back to the description of chelev. Which chelev is permitted and which is forbidden? Amar Rav Nachman chelev asui kikova ino sosem. So, and again, by the way, with the corollary halacha, that once we identify to be forbidden chelev, it will not serve as a sosem. Permitted chelev, or shuman, as we also like to call it, it would in fact serve as a stima. Chelev hasui kikova ino sosem. So if you see chelev looking like a helmet, so it's not going to be sosem. Hecha, so meaning what the gemara? Well, hold on one second. So hecha, so good. Helmet looking chelev. Where are we right now in the animal? So Amar lechita de karkasha. So the Gemara gives two opinions. One is that we're talking about the chelev that's found around the colon of the animal. Ve'amar le tarfasha de liba. Or some say that it is the chelev that's surrounding the heart. Amar Rav Shammas minei de Rav Nachman tarte. So from Rav Nachman, there are really two things that come out. There is chimtza, or some have it with the hay. Himsa ubar himsa chatzasim v'chalosasim, that there is himsa, there is himsa derivative. One is going to be sosim, one is not going to be sosim. V'lo yadana haminayu, and I don't know which one's which. So in other words, so what we're going to have to do is a number of things over here. We're going to have to identify what's the himsa, what's the bar himsa, and which one is sosim, which one is not sosim, meaning, or to put in other terms, which one's forbidden, which one's permissible. Rav Huna bar Chinah, Rav Huna bar Eid, Rav Nachman Amar, bar himsa sasim, and himsa lo sasim. So the bar himsa is in fact going to be sosim, meaning it will in fact be shuman, not chelev, therefore it serves as a seal, therefore it's going to be permitted, and the chimsa itself is not going to be sosim, which means that it is chelev, and therefore going to be forbidden to eat, and not serve it as a stima. And again, just a mnemonic in terms of helping us remember, the strength of the son, the derivative, is going to be stronger than that of the father. Meaning the father in this construct is the chimsa. The son, the derivative, is the bar chimsa. The chimsa is no good, meaning you can't eat it and it won't be so same. The bar chimsa is good, meaning it's shuman, and it would be a stima. The Gemara over here making reference to the Yafakocha ben Mikocha Av is referencing Rashi says a Gemara back in Shavuos, where the Gemara talks about that under certain circumstances in Halacha, the son's ability, financial ability, sometimes becomes stronger than that of the father. See Rashi, see the Gemara in Shavuos for more of a description of that. It's mamash at the end of the Masechta. Anyway, we continue now. Hi himsa, vahai bar himsa, tashma. Good. So which one's which? So Tashma Damar of Nachman Inu Mechal Achle Uli Didan Mistam Nami Lo Sasim? Question mark. Now, in order to appreciate and understand this, though, once again, let's turn all of our attention back to the keva. Let's take a look at the keva together. In terms of a picture, so the there are a number of good pictures to take a look at in terms of which kevas we should be talking about right now. So you could take a look. I'm just leaping ahead a little bit, 72. So in 72, you're going to be taking a look at the bottom picture, and you're going to see the keva over there. Again, it's a U-shaped stomach. So there is basically the interior, that little chela that exists right there in the center of it. I don't mean center, but I mean on the part that is interior. And then there's the exterior. So over here now, we are going to be learning together the following. There is a machlokas. Turn one more page. Go to page 74. Again, the a really good picture of the keva. And with the fat of the interior, let's give it a name. Chelev di Ayasra. Right? We're going to see that together in the Gemara in just a moment. And on the outside, there's a little bit of chelev resting on the outside. That's chelev de Akashta. And now, basically, here's what we're learning together. There were two Jewish communities living at the time of the Gemara, one in Israel and one in Babel. I know we all know that. But they had a divergence of minhagim in terms of which fats that they were going to eat. In Eretz Yisrael, they were more mekel. In Babel, there were more machmir. Rav Nachman makes the following comment. On the very bottom of yesterday's daf, which we just finished, Amar Rav Nachman, Inu Mechal Achli. They, meaning, he's referring to the, Chachamim, all the Jews of Eretz Yisrael. They eat that chalev. So look, our minig is not to eat it. But that's a chumrah on our part. And so in other words, in the very least, let's treat it like for like permitted shuman, and so that let it at least serve as a steamer. Good. That was Rav Nachman's point. Now we understand it. So I'm Rav Nachman inu mechal achlei uli dadan mistam nami lo sasim. Good. So he's referring now to some chelev that exists on the keva, on the fourth stomach, and he's acknowledging we're being machmir, but let's not be too machmir. In other words, in Eretz Yisrael, they're eating it, so mamash, they're treating it like shuman. Let's at least consider it to be a stima. Now, and the proper inflection in terms of reading it is inu mechal achle uli didan mistam nami lo sasim, like rhetorical question. And Rashi on the very top of the Amud writes, lididan b'nei bavol nehidalo achli lei. Look, we're not going to eat it, but mia mechaskinu lebechelav tahor liyo sosim. But let's treat it like permitted fat so that it serves as a stima. Now, this is the bar chimtza that we just mentioned just earlier, in that we know it's mutter. Again, in Bavel, they're machmir, in that they won't eat it, but we know it's mutter. Vahainu di iyasra chelev. Now, which fat is it? So right now we're identifying it as the inner lining of the keva. Right, I'm pointing, which is great for everyone here. But in other words, but on page 74, the inside fat of the keva. So the alser chelv shebamakom hayeser shakeva asui kekeshes. Here Rashi now gives an anatomical description where it looks like a bow. Sorry, umibechutz kari dakashta. The outer lining is referred to as the akashta, and umibifnim laogel kari di ayasra. And the inside is called the ayasra. So cheva. Uvid de ayasra pligi kidemafarsh va'azal. Now, this is where the divergence of minhagim between B'nai Eretz Yisrael and B'nai Bava. Now, kuli amalo pligi, I'm sorry. De akashta kuli amalo pligi, back to the Gemara in the top of Nun Amud Aleph. Now, when it comes to the outer lining, there is no debate. The asr, everyone's going to agree that it's forbidden. Ki pligi di ayasra. It's only on the inner lining. Igadami de ayasra, I'm sorry. Now, before we get to the ikadamri, so what is the debate in terms of the inner lining, the inner fat? Rashi writes, ki pligi de ayasra. Let me go back one Rashi. Dakasha kolam lo pligi de bein lebnei bavel ubein lebnei marava aser daafilu Rabbi Kiva damar leal tosav from aniklav aser daainam le tosav dami sheinu mechubar ela beemtsa keshes shekorim pishta. So Rashi gives a description over here that for the most part, the outer chelev of the keva follows the characteristics of krum v'niklav v'tosav. In other words, it basically has a membrane, it peels off, and it's not really connected, it more or less drapes over. Now, Rashi acknowledges that some of the outer fat, there is some connection between the fat, but it's really just a small amount. So in other words, so it's krum niklav v'tosav, according to both Tanaim that we learned earlier this morning, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel, it's going to be forbidden. Masha Enkein on the inside. Take a look at the next Rashi. Ki pligi di ayasra b'nei bavel savri like Rabbi Shmuel. So the b'nei bavel hold like Rabbi Shmuel d'amar kol krum v'niklav chelev tamehu v'haynami krum v'niklav hu. So the b'nei bavel are following the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. All you needed for it to be chelev is just krum v'niklav and that's it. Masha Enkein and Eretz Yisrael, who are they following? Rabbi Kiva. Uvenei marava ki Rabbi Kiva d'bay tosav krum v'niklav v'haylav tosav hu. And because the inner fat of the keva is not draping over, but rather connected to the keva, so even though it's krum v'niklav, it's not tosav, according to Rabbi Kiva, it's not chelev. That is version number one. Now, in another version of this, Igadami, back to the Gemara. So Igadami de Ayasra kule amalo pligi de share. Everyone is in agreement that the Ayasra is in fact permissible. Ki pligi de akashta. The only debate is regarding the akashta, the outer. Ki ham. Ki hadam rav avya amar rabbi ame mikamsin. I'm sorry. Before we get to the kiha. And according to Rashi over here, so everyone's going to be makel in the second version. Everyone's going to be makel on the inner, because again, it's not tosav. And as far as the outer is concerned, so there is going to be a machlokas, and see Rashi for an explanation of what the machlokas may in fact be according to the second version. But as Rashi points out over here, we're going back to this first version. Ki had amar rav avya amar rabbi ami mikamsin, v'chein amar rabbi yanai mishum zaken echad mikamsin. So this idea of mekamsin is the following, that in Eretz Yisrael, so what they would do is they would take the fat, the inner lining fat, which remember, according to the first version, in Eretz Yisrael they believed was okay, was mutter. What they would do is they would just skim a little bit off the top. Why they would skim a little bit off the top? So Rashi says, "Notli mimenu ma'at lamala me'ahi de'ayasra mimi shechel v'kerev shochev alav v'ochla ashar." Because you had the chelev of the kerev touching it, so basically because of that contact, you just skim off the top of the chelev of the keva, specifically the ayasra, and then after that they would eat in Eretz Yisrael. Amar avi avi ahave kamina kamid rabbi ami kamtsu v'havu lei v'achel. So they had Rabbi Ami. They gave him some of the ayasra fat. He skimmed off the top and he would eat it. So v'havulei v'achol shami de Rabbi Chanina havekai kamei de Rabbi Chanina amrle kmotz havli de echol. So do the same thing for me. Skim a little bit off the top so that I can eat it. Chazia de have ke mechasmeim. Now he saw that he was a little bit hesitant about eating it. Amar le bavlai at. He says, I know why you're hesitant to eat it, because you're not from these parts. you're from Bavel. And so therefore, so you don't eat it. So fine. Gum shadi. So what you should do is you should cut it off and then eat it. One last thing we're going to finish up with today. I'm sorry. Gum means to cut it off. And shadi means throw it away.
So he's not going to eat it.
Not gonna, now, in other words, he knows that he was
a
b'nei.
The Shabbos didn't want to eat it because he's above Lord.
Right.
Why didn't he?
Why didn't he eat it himself?
He wanted to eat it.
Okay. One last thing we're going to finish up with, and that's the following. If you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi in the middle of Divrei Maskil ki pligi de akashta. So Rashi, if you look in the towards the middle of the Rashi, right after he quotes the Gemara in Pesachim, ki asa rabba b'chana achal de ayasra ola gabe rav avya v'chase min kamei mishum de b'nei bavel asri laivli didin tavayu asiri. Rashi says that for us, uli didan, tavayu asiri. Rashi writes that nowadays we aser both sides of the keva, inner and outer. The baser b'nei bavel garinan, the anan b'nei gola anan. Great line of Rashi. Rashi says, who are we descendants of? Rashi says, we are descendants of the b'nei bavel. So we here, I mean, when I say we, I'm meaning, right, he's describing the Ashkenazic Jewry of France and Germany, circa 12th century. So he says that we are the descendants of the b'nei gola, and therefore we are going to be machmir. Ukalishna kama luchumra. Techolhecha deika tre lishna begamara. E midida raisa hu zil luchumra. Uva derabana zil basar basra. So in other words, so when it comes to an Issa Daraisa, which is, this is an Issa Daraisa, and there are two Lashonis in the Gemara, and according to the first Lashon, it comes out now that we're going to be Machmir, and again, B'nai Bavel are going to be Machmir, on the inner and on the outer, and we are descendants of the B'nai Bavel, so therefore we're going to be Machmir. So says Rashi.